Now we're holding on page 110 in Nedarim Ois Yud Aleph. We learned last time about the Mishnah had mentioned various ways in which the mitzvah of Milah is so special, and one of them was that we see that Moshe Rabbeinu got in trouble for delaying his son's Milah for even a short time. So now the Gemara is going to expand on that whole point. Marsha, by the way, points out an interesting point in this regard. Since when is a person chayav misa for delaying a mitzvah saseh? So Marsha gives two answers. First of all, he was a tzaddik, and Hashem always treats tzaddikim more strictly than others. Second of all, though, Marsha makes an interesting point. At this point, this is before Matan Torah, Moshe is still considered a ben noyach. Well, we have in the Gemara Sanhedrin, in connection with Dalad Mrs. Based, in connection, I mean, with Sheva Mrs. Menoyach, which actually we start to learn about in Daf Yomi tomorrow, Best Hashem, the Gemara points out that by Ben Noyach, there's no such thing as Shoigig, well, there is, but only a much more limited kind of Shoigig with his mitzvahs. If he didn't know better, that's not an excuse. Ignorance of the law is not an excuse. Only if he didn't know the facts, he didn't realize this woman was an Eishes Ish, for example, then fine, that's different. But anyway, the point is, therefore, being that he's a ben noyach, the expression is as harosan zuhi misosan. The warning itself is enough. You don't need anything else, and already the ben noyach is chayav misa for being over. So in the same way over here, Moshe had the mitzvah bris milah. There's no shoygig, there's no delaying, there's no nothing. Immediately zuhi misosan. Okay, so the Gemara says Tanya Rabbi Shur ben Korcho Eimer, V'doyla Mila, we see how great Mila is, Shekol Zchuyas Sh'osa Moshe Rabbeinu, as much as with all the Zchusim that Moshe had accomplished so far. And remember, by this time he's 79 years old, he had a lifetime of mitzvahs behind him. Still, Lo Omdu Lo B'Sharshin Yisrashal Min HaMila. Still, all those Maisim Tovim did not stand him in good stead when he was lax about the mitzvah of Mila and delayed it. The pasuk says, "Vayhi baderach b'maloin," when it was on the way, when Moshe and his wife and his children are on the way, page 110 in the Nedarim. When he was on the way in the hotel, vayitkashehu Hashem, then Hashem met up with him, vayivakish, Hashem encountered him, vayivakish hamisoi, and was looking to kill him. So we see another one, and what was the problem? As we see in the following psukim, that Sipporah made a bris milah for their son, so we see that was the problem. An interesting point that it uses the expression by Yitzkeshehu Hashem. Usually Hashem is Midas Arachmim. So it means, in other words, so one point is that it wasn't necessarily Hashem is going to actually want to kill Moshe, but it was more like to warn him, to give him a very strong warning that he better take care of the matter right away. In fact, there's an explanation that compares it to Al Derech HaGehav. There's a din. If a person refuses, generally speaking, punishments in Torah are usually for mitzvahs loisase. You have, for example, a person worships somebody zari, is chayiv misa. A person eats chaylev, is chayiv kores. Does any of 160 odd other mitzvahs, it gets malchus, etc. But when it comes to mitzvahs, I say, usually there's no statutory punishment, but there is a concept where Beis Din can beat a person to force him to do the mitzvah. He says, I refuse to eat matzah on Pesach, for example. They can beat him, agitates in action, until he says, fine, I'm willing to eat matzah until there's no beating him anymore. So in the same way, there's an explanation that Hashem is doing the same thing to Moshe, not to kill him, but in other words, you better do this mitzvah or else.
Is that something like beating a man to give a gift to his wife?
So that's similar, although not identical. But yeah, it's based on a similar concept, but deep down a Yid wants to do the Eidosh Dizratzin and so forth, yeah. But that's an explanation of why it uses the name Hashem over here, Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is Midas HaRachmim, because it represents that Hashem was doing it out of Rachmim rather than out of Din. So what's going on? So Rabbi Shlomo ben Korcha is saying, in short, that Moshe was that Moshe didn't bother doing the mitzvah fast enough. But Amar Rabbi Yosi or Rebbe, Chas v'Shalom shemoshe nisrashal min amila. Chas v'Shalom, you're going to say Moshe was careless about doing the mitzvah? It wasn't that he was careless, that he just didn't bother to do it. Ela kach ol Moshe. Moshe had a cheshben in this. He thought to himself, emol v'etzei, omol v'etzei, should I make a bris milah on my son and then set out on the journey to Mitzrayim? Can't. Sakonihi, it's a danger to the child. Dichtir b'ayhi b'ayim ha'shlishi v'yosem koyabim. As we find by the people of Shem, that on the third day, when they were in great pain, then Shimon and Levi went and massacred them. And the Gemara, in Shabbos, you have a whole perek in Masechta Shabbos that deals with the dinner of milah. And it mentions over there, by the same token, for example, the third day after a bris is particularly dangerous to the baby, and therefore we have certain days. If the third day comes out on Shabbos, if the bris was on Thursday, and the third day is Shabbos, then there are certain things that you're allowed to do that you otherwise wouldn't. The Ran, by the way, points out, it actually doesn't necessarily mean that the third day is particularly dangerous. The first and second days are also. All it is on the third day, after there was 3 days straight where the people of Shem were in pain, then Shimon and Levi figured, now we have our opportunity. But not to say that the first and second days are any better. Not all of the Mephoshim agree with that, and some Mephoshim do understand that Marsha points out that Rashi in Bava Metzia also understands that way, but there are other Mephoshim who there are other Rishonim who understand that no, it means the third day is particularly hazardous. In any case, so he figures I can't set out on the journey immediately after I make the Bris Mila. Should I make the bris and then wait 3 days? Can't. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Amar Leich Shuv Mitzrayim. Hashem told me to return immediately to Mitzrayim. So he's between a rock and a hard place. So he didn't do anything wrong, says Rabbi Yossi, in delaying the Mila. Element named Manenash. So why was he punished? Mepeshinis Asik Bamolin Tchila. Because when they got to the inn, to the hotel, he first busied himself with that. He should have, as soon as they get to a place where they stop, then he'll do the bris, and then he can worry about lodgings for himself and his family. And instead, he put finding the lodgings and then setting them up in their hotel first. Now, the Ran and the Rosh both point out, so wait a minute, don't you still have the same problem? How is that any better? He's going to do the bris mila. They still have to continue on their journey as soon as possible. The answer is that this inn was very close to Mitzrayim already. So if they're going to make the bris mila there, there's not so much of the problem would be if they're going to have to travel a long distance with a baby who was just gemalot, then it would be dangerous for him. But like this, they were a short distance from Mitzrayim, so therefore Moshe should have taken care of the matter at the earliest possible opportunity.
The man of Shechem had been most vulnerable on the first day. They had 3 days to heal up. Again.
Well, so that's the point. In other words, it takes three days for it to heal. We find by Avraham Avinu also that on the third day is when Hashem visited him and the Malachim visited him. So that's the thing. So you have Lachlokas Rishonim. Is it that all 3 days are hazardous, and therefore there's no greater hazard on the third day than there is in the first, just that Shimon and Levi figured after 3 days, where these guys have been for 3 days straight incapacitated, then now is the best time? Or is it there are Rishonim who learn the first day is not so bad, the second day is not so bad, the third day things really reach a peak, and that's particularly dangerous? So here the Ran explains according to the first possibility.
Usually when you have a problem with your body, it gets stronger as
you get stronger. Right. So sometimes, so that's one way of understanding it. The point is, apparently, the Ran has to understand it that way, because otherwise, fine, let him make the bris mila, let them travel for the first 2 days, and then fine, if they have to take a one-day break, then they'll do that. The implication seems to be the whole 3 days is hazardous. So you have to take a 3-day break, and that doesn't work because the Eibush is telling him to get to Mitzrayim as soon as possible.
So it basically goes into this whole thing that he was not familiar with Nisrasho Mershi. Can't say he was Nisrasho. It's a whole beer.
Right.
And
but he's saying Shemus Asimah, the difference is, in other words, according to Rabbi Shurban Koch and Nisrashel, means like he wasn't even going to do it at all. Or like if he was going to do it, it was going to be at some later time. He was in no hurry to do it. Rabbi Yossi is saying he was in a hurry to do it. Just in this case, he figured he has to get his family arranged in lodgings first. That's not so much Nisrashel. Nisrashel would imply...
He got to this hotel.
Yeah.
That's
not Nisrashel. Nisrashel would mean that he's not bothering to do the mitzvah at all. Yeah. So in fact, we talked about yesterday, and Marsha brings it over here from Midrashim, that Moshe had made a promise to Yisrael as a condition of marrying his daughter Tzipora, that he's not going to mal one of his sons. We talked about yesterday which one of the sons it was, whether it was Gershom or Eliezer. So that would have to do with the Nisrashel, that in other words, the fact that Moshe was willing to forego Bris Mila for one of his sons, and Rabbi Shoban Kocha is saying that therefore, so he wasn't planning to do it at all, or at least not until the child is much older, that's the Nisrashel, as opposed to according to Rabbi Yossi, we're just talking about he was going to spend an hour getting them arranged in their lodgings, and then he was going to take care of the matter of Bris Mila, and they were just telling him that even that's not right.
Does Mishrashel mean more nonchalant than it does lady?
Nonchalant or heedless or whatever. Marsha also brings an interesting point now, where he brings from the Mizrahi on the Psukim that the whole concept that most mitzvahs do not override pikuach nefesh, which we're talking about actually in halacha now as well in Kesher Shulchan Aruch, we learn that from the pasuk v'chai b'hem, which means v'loisha yomus b'hem, and that was only after Matan Torah. This is before Matan Torah. So that being the case, how does Moshe even have the possibility to say, you know what, it would be dangerous? Before Matan Torah, you have no such thing. You've got to keep mitzvahs, whether it's dangerous or not. So the Mizrahi goes into an explanation about it, but then Marsha points out that actually that there's a sugya on this topic in Gemara Sanhedrin, where it talks about that really logically we would have said that that no mitzvah should be that every mitzvah should override the Koach Nefesh, even Avodah Zorah, Gedolah Arayos, and Shvichas Damim. We need a special limud from the pasuk to say that otherwise. So therefore, only by Jews do we need that to tell us that fakir, that we shouldn't learn from Ritzeach Naira Marosa that it does not override, and therefore, so in other words, in short, fakir over here would have, we would say that any mitzvah overrides the Koach Nefesh, and therefore Moshe has a good reason to say if the bris milah is going to be dangerous to the baby, then we have to delay until it's not a matter of pikuach nefesh anymore. Meaning, in other words, until we get to a place where I can make the milah without having the problem. So Ian Yaakov also adds the point, the very fact that the Ebishta gave the mitzvah of bris milah on the eighth day implies itself that the milah is supposed to be at a time when it's less hazardous to the baby, which is why we don't do it on the day the baby was born. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer. Reb Shimon Gamliel says here's a third possibility. So far, both Reb Yeshua ben Karcha and Reb Yossi are assuming that the Malach came and was endangering Moshe's life. So now Reb Shimon Gamliel says, never mind all that. Lo the Moshe Rabbeinu Bikash Satan Harig. It wasn't actually that the Satan was coming to kill Moshe in the first place. El al Oise Tinek. It was a baby. So in other words, In other words, Marsha learns, according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, we would say that again, it wasn't Moshe's fault, kind of. He had no choice because of the tznai that he had made with Yisroel. So therefore, it was the baby whose life was in danger. Why is it that Moshe, according to the first two explanations, we would understand Moshe's life was in danger. And if the Gemara is going to go on to say he was being swallowed up by a malach, therefore he couldn't do the bris for the baby himself, therefore Tzipor had to do it. But if you say that was the baby who was in danger, why didn't Moshe himself do the milah? And the answer would be because Moshe had made the condition that he's not allowed to. He'd sworn to Yisroel that he's not going to. Whereas Tzipora has the ability to override that because she hadn't made the promise, and she can basically be Merchel on behalf of her father. With that said, also we talked about yesterday that Marsha refers over here to a relevant Gemara in Avodah Zarah that discusses the question: can a woman do a bris milah? Is it a valid milah? And the Gemara brings two opinions over there. One is that yes, that she at least started the milah and then Moshe completed it. The other opinion is that to begin with, they had somebody else with them, and Tzipora gave that person, that man, instructions to do it. It's a machlokas in the Gemara, and ultimately it's a machlokas aposkim, whether a woman can do a bris milah or not. We talked about yesterday, the halacha as paskin and shulchan aruch is in principle yes, but we're mahadur not to allow it unless in extreme circumstances. Okay. Anyway, Shenemar, sort of Shimon Gamliel says, you see from the psukim that it was the baby whose life was in danger. Shenemar, because she says, ki chasan domim atali, you are a chosan of blood to me. Now, say Re'emi Kori Chosen. Consider who is called the Chosen in this context. Moshe or Satinik. Moshe can't really be called a Chosen. He's been married to Zipporah for years already. So he's not a Chosen anymore. Heviem is Zaptinik. Whereas the word Chosen means like he becomes a Chosen. He becomes a Shemachat Nenosim Mitzvah Rishonah. The Ram says it's like he's now made a Chosen. He's now inaugurated into a new stage of his life with Bris Milah. So when she says ki chasan domim atali, we meant to understand that it was the baby, and therefore we have to say it was the baby's life who was in danger. Okay. Now going back to the explanation that it was Moshe's life was in danger, what happened? Dorash Rabbi Yehuda bar Zvina or Bizna, b'shosh and esrashal Moshe Rabbeinu min Amila, when Moshe was being careless or heedless or however you want to, or blasé or however you want to translate it, about Mila, so he wasn't doing the Mila for whatever reason that we discussed before. Bo Af v'chema uvlo'uhu, two malachim named Af and Chema, which represent different aspects of Hashem's anger. Af and Chema, both words used in Tanakh to refer to anger, came up uvlo'uhu, and they swallowed him up. So in other words, when it says vayivakesh Hashem vayivakesh hanisoy, it means that Hashem sent malachim to do the job. All they left unswallowed of Moshe is raglov. Now on the face of it, raglov means his feet. However, the Ran explains that actually it means the area of milah. We find in other places in Tanakh where the word raglov is used as a euphemism for the area of the era. So therefore, all they left unswallowed was that area which clued in Sepoda to the fact that the problem was that a milah hadn't been done. So according to this, so before we said that Rav Shimon Gamliel had said the baby's life was in danger, now Rav Yehuda Bar Zvino or Bar Bizna is saying that no, it was Moshe's life who was in danger. And how was it? Because he was being swallowed up by these two malachim. Rashi in Chumash actually says it differently. Rashi mentions in Chumash that it was only one malach. First he swallowed Moshe from his head till the area of his milah, and then he disgorged him, and then he swallowed him from the other end, from the bottom of his feet, up to his milah. And therefore, so in other words, the first time if it was only swallowing one half, then Sepoda wouldn't clue her in necessarily that it's because of the milah. That's as much as he was able to get into his mouth. But then when she sees the other end also, he stops by the milah, that she realizes the schus of milah is blocking the malach from going any further. That tells us, therefore, that the problem is the lack of bris milah. Strange story, but yeah, that's how it is. An interesting point, by the way, is there's a mafoshim on the pasuk that explained that even then Sepoda at first wasn't sure what it was, because now like this, the pasuk says she made a bris for the baby, and then the malachim left Moshe alone. But an interesting point is that she had two things to consider. Okay, so obviously the malachim are not swallowing up the area of Moshe's milah. But to begin with, what does that mean? Is the problem the lack of milah for their son, or is the problem maybe the fact that Moshe married her in the first place, where after all, fine, this is before Matan Torah, there's not really a distinction between Jews and Goyim, but after all, she's the daughter of Koyan Midian. Maybe he had done something wrong with that area of his body by marrying and having relations with her. Then when she made the bris and the malachim let go of him, then she realized no, it had nothing to do with that. It was strictly a problem that there had not been a bris milah. So that's the thing. So there are two different opinions about it. There's one on the face of it, it was the second son, because both boys, on the face of it, we would say both boys were born by that point, Gershom and Eliezer, because then afterwards Moshe sent Sepoda and the boys back to Yisrael, and then they came back in this week's parasha together with Yisrael. So both of them had to have been born by that time. And on the face of it, Gershom had been given a bris in the proper time, and it was the newborn baby, Eliezer, that knocked. But on the other hand, yeah, Marshal brings from a medrash that it was actually the first one, because we talked about yesterday, because according to that, Yisrael had made him promise that he's gonna raise his first son without a bris milah and without Yiddishkeit. Yeah, we talked about that yesterday. Yeah. It was for Matan Torah, and also he figured he needs to marry Tzipora because she's his basherta, so therefore he figured he'll have to go along with it. But in fact, that's one explanation when you say that Moshe was. When we say over here that according to Rabbi Shur ben Korcha that Moshe was punished in his sedashal min amila, that's part of the explanation. The very fact that he agreed to such a condition itself shows a lack of concern for the importance of bris milah. Yeah. So miyad, so right away, v'tikach tzipora tsur, as the pasuk continues, tzipora took a tsur. Now, on the face of it, tsur means a sharpened rock, and the fact is, you could do a bris milah with a rock, although the minhag is to do it with a metal knife, but we do find also by Yeshua, where it says the expression chayvei tsurim, and it means not sharpened rocks, but it actually meant metal knives, so maybe over here, tsur also means a knife. Whatever the case, she took that, v'tukhre his erla spuna, she cut off the erla of her son, v'tagel raglo v'gomer, and she touched it to his feet. So again, his feet being, as we just said, the area of the milah. So in other words, she's demonstrating with that she recognizes that this is why the malachim are attacking Moshe, is because there had not been the bris milah done until now. And she says, kichasan domim aton atoli, which as we just said, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel had explained that the words chasan domim refers to the baby. Then the pasuk says vayirach mimenu, the malach then let go of Moshe, and then she says chasan domim lamulos. Marsha goes into some detail over here about what she was expressing with these two phrases. So he says as follows. So first she thought, even if fine, we'll do the bris for the baby, but it seems like Moshe is a goner anyway. He's going to be punished for the fact that he hadn't mauled his baby. Okay, we can make up from now in Mikana Laba that we'll maul the baby, but still, does that mean that Moshe is going to be saved? So she wasn't sure. But as soon as she saw, she even began the process of the milah. Vatichros is orlas bna. And that Gemara in Avodah Zarah mentions that one possibility is she only began the cutting, and right away the malach let go of Moshe, and then he was able to complete the cutting. Then immediately she realized that. No, the milah has the power not only that Moshe is not only that the baby will now be gemalit, but that Moshe himself will not be punished any further for it. Because to begin with, the malach was not coming to kill Moshe, but to force him to do the bris milah, like we were saying before. That's why she had the double expression. First she says, ki chasan domim atali, and then she says, chasan domim lamulos, recognizing with this, that now she says that I know for sure that now my husband won't be killed, and his saving is dependent on the milah, and as soon as we do the milah, then immediately he's saved. Now, it continues the Gemara, Ba'osa Shah Bikash Moshe Lahorgam. Now, so we said the Gemara, there were these two malachim, Ach and Chema. So now, after it was all over, Moshe wanted to kill these two malachim. Now, how could he have the ability to do that? Doesn't he realize these malachim were sent by Hashem? Marsha says that he figured like this. He had every right to delay the milah, like we said before, because like Rabbi Yossi had said, he figured he had no choice but to delay the milah until they're safely settled in the hotel. So therefore, he figured they're not coming in a shlichus of Hashem. They're just coming, like, on their own, of their own volition. Well, then, ha-bolahog, ha-hashkimahogoy. So he figured he has every right to kill them in self-defense. But Shenemar, as we find a pasuk, the heref me'af va'azoiv chema, let go of af and abandon chema. In context, the pasuk is talking about it's in Kapitel Lamed Zion. You see where Rishoyim are being successful. You're gonna think maybe I should try to copy them and I'll be successful too. So no, let go of that anger and that wrath about how they're being so successful, and realize that Eibishter has his way of running the world. But here the Gemara is taking it that this is Hashem telling Moshe, leave Af and Chema alone. Don't try to kill them. I sent them. So it's not Habola Hoga Chahashkin Lahoga. I sent them because by my tzivoy, and therefore because you were careless with the milah, and therefore you need to leave them alone. So v'yesh omim l'chema horag. Some say that Moshe did actually kill one of them, namely Chema. Shenema, as we find later on, a pasuk in Yeshaya, Hashem says, Chema ein li, I have no Chema. Well, why doesn't Hashem have Chema? Because Chema was killed. So the question is, Vaksiv ki yagoti, the context of the pasuk, Marsha explains, is that Hashem is saying, mi itneni shomer shayis b'mochome afsa ba'atisena yochad. Hashem is saying, like, if I still had Chema, then I would just stomp one time on the goyim and burn them all together. But now that I don't have that Chema, then, like, so to speak, I have to be more patient with them. So according to that opinion, Moshe killed Chema. So the question is, v'oksiv ki yagotim ipnei ha'afa Chema. Moshe himself describes that after the Chetah Egel, I was worried, I was afraid of the af and the Chema. So we see Chema was still alive. And the answer is Chei Chema. However, there's two different malachim called Chema. So the Moshe killed one, but there's still the other one. The Borisema Gunda de Chema. The other possibility is the Chema that Moshe says that he's afraid of later on is actually not Chema himself, but rather his retinue, the whole entourage of malachim, the whole platoon of malachim that goes together with Chema. They were still there, but Chema himself, like their general, so to speak, was killed. What does this symbolize? So Marsha explains like this. We said that it was the Satan that was coming to kill Moshe. Now, who's Satan? Who Yetzirah? Who Malach HaMavis? The Gemara in Sukkah mentions that the Yetzirah has a number of names, and one of them is Orel. So now, Af and Chema, therefore, are soldiers who serve under the Satan. So they represent the two levels. They represent the Orla and the Priya skin and the Priya membrane. So now he hadn't taken away the Klippus from his son. He still had the Orla and he still had the Priya and he still had the Priya membrane. So now when Moshe wants to kill them, means he's doing the Milah, and that way he'll separate them and he'll kill them away. He'll kill their strength. And Hashem tells him, no, that's not going to help. as the pasuk that we quoted before, Herach Me'afa Azor Chema, the pasuk continues, Al Tischar Ach L'Horeya. Don't try to be jealous to do bad, meaning, in other words, it's not enough to do the bris milah, you're also the person also has to hold himself back from doing evil. So therefore, in other words, Hashem is telling Moshe, according to that, you're trying to kill Af and Chema. But no, it's not going to work. Herach Me'afa Azor Chema, if it's just a matter of killing them, it's not going to work just by doing the bris milah. You need also, a person needs to stay away from Averis. And since not everybody does that, and in during their lifetime after a bris milah, then you can't kill them. Or the other possibility is he killed Chema, representing that he killed the more major clipper over there, the one that represents the Urla, but not the one representing the Priya. In fact, Marashah says, given that we're saying that Sipporah was the one who began the job and Moshe only finished it, so therefore so he wasn't able to be Mevatel the whole, he wasn't able to be Mevatel the clipper as a whole. So therefore, only Chema, but not Af, and even within Chema, only himself, but not his whole entourage of Malachim. So there's other places, there's a few other places in Shas where it mentions this concept of Chema, and there's a Gemara in Shabbos that mentions that Hashem sent a Malach, and one of the Malachim that Hashem sent to destroy Yerushalayim at the time of the first Beis Hamikdash is called Chema. You have a Gemara in Bava Basra that Eitz Yosef refers to over here that says when a person gives tzedakah, then he subjugates Af and Chema. And there's a few Gemaras like that, and in each of those places, Tosfos asks, based on our Gemara over here that was saying that Moshe killed Chema. So again, the answer is either like the Gemara is saying over here, there's two Chemas, or there's the retinue of Chema. So one point is, Marshall makes a point over there in Bava Basra, it comes out in a way the Gemara says over there that a person who gives tzedakah, according to one opinion, is greater than Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why, because we see Moshe Rabbeinu over here was only able to overcome Chema, whereas over there we're saying a person gives tzedakah, baseser, then he's overcoming Af and Chema. So in that case, he's accomplishing, in that sense, he's accomplishing more as far as destroying clippers, even than Moshe Rabbeinu did. Okay. The Gemara continues, Tanya, Rebbe Omer, G'doyla Mila, see how great Mila is, She'en lecha tzadik gomer ba'olam, there was no greater tzadik in the world, or the Gemara say in the printed Gemara, Mishin is asik b'mitzvahs, there was nobody who was involved in doing mitzvahs, Avram Avinu, like Avram, there was no greater tzaddik or no greater one who was involved in doing mitzvahs than him. V'lenikra tomim ela al shema milah, and yet he was only called tomim only when he had a bris milah. Shenema his halach lafanei ve'yeh tomim, as Hashem tells him, walk before me and be tomim. So we see, in other words, that so as much as he had spent 99 years at that point doing mitzvahs, then he still wasn't tomim. This is the Rebbe explains in a sticha, by the way. We have the famous Hayom Yom, where the Rebbe Rashab at 4 or 5 years old cries, why doesn't the Eibishter reveal himself to me like he did to Avraham Avinu? And some ascetic explains when a Yid 99 years old realizes that he still needs to do a bris milah, then he deserves the Eibishter reveals himself to him. So what's the significance of 99? There's a sticha where the Rebbe talks about that. Like this, we say in Pirkei Avos, Ben Meir Kilo Mesva Avro Bottom and Olam, 100 years old, has completed his entire avoda. Because if he's worked on himself properly in those 100 years, and Avraham Avinu certainly did, then it means he's refined the entire 10 spheres, 10 times 10, each one incorporating aspects of all the other ones. But when he's 99, means he's not quite there yet. He's almost there, but he still has more shleimus to accomplish. And Avraham recognized that, and he went ahead and did what Hashem did to have a bris milah. Only then is he called Tom. So it's halach lafana ve'shenema. As the pasuk says, it's halach lafana ve'yetamim. Uchtiv, and the pasuk continues, ve'etna brisi ve'niu ve'necha. I will make my covenant between me and you. So we see, until he has the covenant, until he has the bris, he's not called complete. Marashah mentions over here something from Mora Nevuchim, where the Rambam says, now, as the famous question, if the Eibishter wanted that a person should have a milah, why isn't it created to begin with without an orla? The Medrash mentions that Turnus Rufus, I think it was, asked Rabbi Akiva that. So the Rambam deals with that question in Mor Nevuchim as well. And he explains that this is not that Hashem made something incomplete in the world, which was Turnus Rufus's point. It's rather that having a bris milah represents that a person is not complete in his midas, and he needs to complete and perfect his midas. The Rambam makes a big deal about the fact that bris milah weakens a person's taiva for having relations, for znus and whatever, and therefore it helps a person perfect his midas. So in the same vein, the Gemara is saying over here that here Avraham had all the milas, but he's not called tomim in his midas yet until then. Dover Achar, another explanation, Gdolam Mila, Sheshkula Kineged Kala Mitzvah Shabbat Torah. Mila is so great that it's equal to all the other mitzvahs in the Torah. Shenema, Kiel, Piad, Vorma, Ela, Karati, Itcha, Bris, Ves, Yisrael. Hashem says to Moshe, when after we gave him the second Luchas, based on these words, I have made a covenant with you and with all the Jewish people. So in other words, we understand the Pasuk to mean that the Bris is equal to Kol Advarim, to all these words of Torah that I've just taught you together with the second Luchas that I'm giving you now. Interestingly, by the way, there's a sefer from the, there's a couple of Sforim, that go along this line, and fine, there's one from the Kli Yoker, there's another one whose author I don't remember, where they go systematically through every parasha in the Torah and find a remez to Bris Milah somewhere in it. So literally, you can say that to Milah is equivalent to Kola Torah Kola. Davar Acher, another explanation, G'doylam Mila, she'll mole Mila than his Skymul Shemayim Varetz. This we learned in the Mishnah, that if it weren't for Mila, the heavens and earth wouldn't continue to exist. Shenema, im loy brisi, yom v'layla, if it were not for my covenant by day and by night, chukas Shemayim Varetz, by someday, I would not have set up the laws of heaven and earth. So that, now Bris Mila can be done only by day, but once a person has a Mila, then it's with him 24/7, And therefore it exists by Yoim of Alayla. In fact, we find famously David HaMelech, it says, when he went into the bathhouse, he felt bad. He's naked of mitzvahs until he remembered he had his Bris Milah, and then when he came out of there, he composed Lam Natseach Al Hashminis in praise of Bris Milah. Marsha points out, by the way, as far as the previous thing that we're saying that it's equal to the whole Torah, he points out, when you think about it, a person who doesn't have a milah is not really, he can't really keep the mitzvahs yet. In fact, a goy, for example, akum sheshavas chayiv misa, and also a goy is not supposed to learn Torah beyond the seven mitzvahs and the other basic things that he needs to know. So only when a person has a milah, then he's suitable to learn Torah. In fact, it mentions that in connection with Akilas, whatever Akilas Ager, who some say is identical with Unculus, that he asked his uncle, the Roman emperor, what's some kind of line of business that I should go into, and the emperor tells him, find something that people think is cheap and buy it, and you'll see eventually it'll go up in value. So he goes and becomes a Yid, and then later on, when the emperor calls him back in, what do you think you're doing? He says, I followed your advice. Everybody thinks that the Jews are a bunch of nothings, and I realize they're going to be great. Well, so the emperor says to him, fine, but you couldn't have learned the Torah without having a Bris Milah. And an Unculus / Akilas explains to him just this, that you can't really learn Torah the way you're supposed to without having a Bris Milah. Okay. So the Gemara continues, a pliga did a belazer. Now, this explanation that we just said, that Brisi Yom Valayla refers to the Torah, that disagrees with Rabbi Lozer's position. He says Brisi Yom Valayla refers to the Torah, which we learn by day and by night. And the Pasuk says, Imloy Brisi Yoshinema, Imloy Brisi Yom Valayla. So Rabbi Lozer understands the Pasuk to be referring to the Torah rather than to Bris Milah. Marsha points out, by the way, first of all, well, in that case, where Mela Torah, we say in Pirkei Avos, Ala Torah Vala Voda Magmilas Chasadim, the world stands on. But if you're telling me Mila, according to the other opinion, then it should be listed as a fourth thing. That the world stands on four things. Ala Torah Vala Voda Magmilas Chasadim, Vala Mila. So he says, because there's two different things. First of all, there's Mekaimei Olam and there's Ma'amidei Olam. There's the things that the world wouldn't have been created without them in the first place. And there's the things that make the world continue to exist, which is why at the end of Perek Aleph, of Perkei Avos, you have three other things. Ala Din, Vala Emes, Vala Sholem. So here we're saying that you have the three things that are Ben Odom Lachaveroi. If it weren't for Ala Din, Ala Emes, Ala Sholem, the world couldn't continue to exist. Society wouldn't be stable, and therefore would all fall apart, and you wouldn't have Al Shalosh Dvarim Olam Kayim. But here we're dealing with that it's Kayim because of Mila or Torah respectively. That's something else. In other words, the world as a whole, not just society, but the actual physical world and all the entire universe depends on that. So therefore, it's a different category, and therefore it's not listed over there. The Maharal, by the way, makes an interesting point in this connection. He says, really, you know, you think about it, there's a connection between Mila and Torah. We see that the Torah was given after 7 weeks of Sfiras Omer at the beginning of the eighth week. Because eighth is always the Milah Manateva. And Bris Mila also is after seven complete days at the beginning of the eighth day. So therefore, so there is a direct connection between them that both of them are the Milah Manateva. The Gemara continues. Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav, B'shar she'omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Avraham Avinu, His Halech L'Fanei Ve'yei Samim, when Hashem tells Avraham, rather, that walk before me and be complete, Avraham's bones were seized with trembling. He started trembling. He was worried that it means he's lacking something. Did I do something wrong? Have I not done what I need to in order to be Tomim? When Hashem tells him, I'll make my covenant between me and you. In other words, I'm giving you a new mitzvah, which you didn't have until now. Right away, Avraham calmed down. It's not that he did anything wrong. But until now, I couldn't be called Tomim, because like we said, because he still had his Orla. So Marshall relates this to what we said before about Lo Nikra Tomim, that he wasn't called Tomim until he had a Bris Milah. In other words, the same idea that we're saying that Avraham thought that maybe it means that he has an actual mum. Is there something that he did wrong, or does it mean that maybe there's a flaw in Hashem's creation that for that reason he's not Tomim? But then Hashem is telling him, no, the purpose of Bris Milah, not that there's a flaw in my creation, but that there's still more. There's a greater level to come to in Midas, and then you remove the Orla, and then you'll be perfect in Midas. Then Avraham calmed down, and he realized that in that case he has nothing to worry about. It's Hashem is giving him a new mitzvah that he didn't have before. Now the pasuk also said earlier. The pasuk says about Avraham and Hashem by Yotzei Osei Achotza. Earlier it says Hashem took Avraham outside before the Brisbane Amsarim. So what's he doing outside? So you have earlier in that parak, Hashem tells Avraham that you'll have great reward, I'm your shield, and Avraham says, but I don't have any children, and who's going to yaush in me if not Eliezer? So then the pasuk says, Hashem took him outdoors. What's going on? I've looked at my mazel, all I'm going to have is the one son, Yishmael. So you're telling me that I'm going to have another son, Yitzchak? How is that possible? Avraham, go out of your astrology. In other words, hachutza, doesn't this mean physically outdoors of his tent, outside of this whole idea of how you think things work? In mazel Yisrael, there's no mazel for the Jewish people. You're beyond that, and therefore you can have another child as well. Now, Marsha contrasts this with a Gemara at the end of Shabbos, where Avraham says over there that I've looked at my mazel, and I'm not even fated to have a child at all. So there the Gemara is saying that Avraham considers that as a result of his mazel, he's unable to have children at all. Whereas here he's saying, I can have Yishmael, but no more than that. So Marsha explains like this. There's two different things. The Gemara explains there in Shabbos, Avraham's mazel was Tzedek, the planet Jupiter. Now, and it has to do with all the tzedakah that Avraham did. The Gemara explains over there that when Avraham was born, that mazel, that planet, was located in the west, and that's a simon. That's astrologically, that means that he's going to be mitsunan. He's going to be a naturally cold-blooded kind of person who's unable to have the passion to be able to have children. So therefore, you figure that b'derech hateva, he's not going to have children at all. So the Gemara says over there, Hashem said, I will relocate mazel tzedek. I will place it in a different part of the sky, showing that your mazel has changed. So fine, that enabled Avraham now to be able to have a child, to have Yishmael. Now, so that was when Avraham was 70. That was before the Bris Milah I'm starting. Now, years later, Avraham is saying, fine, that changed my mazel, but it didn't change. But after all, his name was still Avraham, and that means that he's b'derech hateva. He could have Yishmael, but no more than that. Now we're saying, because Hashem also changed his name to Avraham, so now Hashem is saying, that's another level. Now it's not even a matter of changing your mazel. Now, because it's halach lefanav ayetamim, now you're going to be completely beyond the whole concept of mazel. Ein mazel Yisrael, which also, as we explained in Chassidus, means ayin, mazel Yisrael. The level of ayin, the level beyond anything that we can comprehend, is mazel Yisrael, and therefore you will be able to have a child, Yitzchak. And then in addition, of course, you also have that at this point also Sarah's name was changed as well, and that also changed it, that now, as the Medrash puts it, Avram was not able to have children, but Avraham will. Sarai was not able to have children, but Sarah will. So in other words, it's a two-step process. First changing his mazel, and then making him that is beyond mazel altogether. Which will be, then we'll continue in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, where the Gemara brings a couple of other pieces that relate to that point of Ein Mazel Yisrael. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Ve'ola, Yud Beis Shvat. You have the famous Yalkut Shimoni that was being circulated around at the time of the first Gulf War, that Melech HaMashiach is going to stand on the roof of the Bis Mikdash and announce to the Jewish people, he anovim yigiazman golastem. And in fact, at that time, when the Rebbe said a sicha, this was in early Nunal, people were announcing that, because, yeah, it was in the run-up to the Gulf War. Now, what's the Loshen in the Medrash, Oymen al-Gag Bais HaMikdash? Now, the halacha is, Gagin Va'aliyas Lo Niskadshu. When it comes to the Bais HaMikdash, the roofs of buildings in the Bais HaMikdash and the upper floors of buildings in the Bais HaMikdash do not have the same kedusha as the ground floors. For example, you can't shecht korbanos on the roof of the Heichel or on the roofs of other buildings over there. So by saying that Moshiach is going to stand al gag beis hamikdash means it's hinting that this announcement of anov megiyas man golastim is going to come from chutzla. It's going to come from a place that doesn't have the full kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. In the same way as the roof doesn't have the full kedusha of the ground floor of the beis hamikdash. So therefore, in other words, in short, the Rebbe was making this announcement here in Crown Heights, which is outside Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't have the full kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, but that's where the announcement anov megiyas man golastim comes from. Continuing on halachas of chol shiyesh b'sakana on Shabbos, we talked about yesterday the basic concept that we have doicha Shabbos for anything that a chol shiyesh b'sakana means. Now, how do we determine whether he's a chol shiyesh b'sakana? So, if there's no expert doctor around, that any person, any individual, even a layman who says I can recognize that this is something dangerous, then we take that as it is in Ramchal Shabbos. However, the Alter Rebbe adds that would only be if it's a yid saying that. If it's a goy and he's not a mumcha, then we can't necessarily rely on him to that extent. Even if a person were to say, a non-doctor were to say, I don't know for sure, but it seems to me that this is something dangerous, then that would also be valid reason for chilul Shabbos, because Safek Nefashos, Lahokol, as long as the Alter Rebbe adds the detail, he does have to say, I recognize this kind of illness. What about if there are doctors around? So if there's one doctor who says that he's dangerously ill and he needs such and such a cure, and one doctor says not, or if the patient himself says he doesn't need, then we follow that. We say then he doesn't need. But if the choyla himself says that he needs it, and the doctor says that not, then we listen to the choyla. Then we listen to the sick person, and we override the doctor with that. The Gemara has the expression about it, lev yadea mara snafshay, the heart knows its own suffering, and therefore, in other words, like he knows, he has a better idea of his condition even than the doctor. On the other hand, if the doctor says this treatment that the patient wants is going to harm him, then we follow the follow the doctor. We can't say to that extent levy dam or a snapshot, because you can't expect a person without medical treatment, without medical training, is not going to know that kind of thing, which treatments are good and which not so much. And then we'll continue talking about tomorrow. That's the shame. What happens if they're saying you need to do something preemptively to get him from becoming sicker? We'll learn about that tomorrow. That's the shame.